Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
Just about 20 minutes to 8. And as I said to you all, we are going to have a discussion this morning. We're going to put down these tough topics until probably about 8:15, 20 after 8. And we're going to deal with an issue that probably we're not hearing enough about, and there are some developments that have us a bit concerned. We saw recently some rainfall that was described as intense. Other people said to themselves, well, this seems to be unusual. It may or may not have been. Joining us this morning to discuss that, to discuss some of the other issues we need to look forward to, or rather not look forward to, but pay attention to, heading up to the rainy season and to the floods that we usually get. A gentleman, he's been with us here before. He's, of course, a staple of our sister station, CNC3, when it comes to their reporting for the weather. As welcome to our program, meteorologist Colleen Hussein. Good morning to you. Nice to have you with us again.
Good morning, Satish. Good to be back.
Well, let's begin our discussion. There's no need for an introduction. People know who you are. You've been with us, and they know you well from the group. So we'll skip that part here this morning. We saw some rain recently that raised a lot of eyebrows. People were saying to the average individual, in the middle of the dry season, rain like wow. And we were told that it was so intense, we recorded levels that we've probably not seen before, we're not accustomed to, and resulted in flooding. Let's start there. What went on? Why? How did that happen?
It's a good question. So the amount of rain that we saw definitely wasn't unprecedented. We have seen April that produced significantly more rain in the past. But we did get five consecutive days of quite a bit of rains falling across mainly the northern half of Trinidad, particularly within a 48-hour period that Tuesday into Wednesday. Parts of northern Trinidad saw anywhere from 2 times to 10 times the average amount of rain that April would produce. So if Trinidad... So Sangre Grande, which was one of the worst hit areas, saw within a 12-hour period on that Tuesday, 8 times the average monthly rainfall, which caused all that devastating flash flooding that we saw in Sangre Grande. And these extreme rainfall totals are unfortunately an impact of climate change. When we have warmer air across the country, that warmer air can hold more water. And when we have these processes in the atmosphere that are really efficient in pumping out all of that rain or moisture from the atmosphere, we get extreme rainfall totals. And that is what happened that week. But the flooding is not only because of climate change. We have developed a lot of Trinidad more than we used to have. So you have illegal quarrying, you have illegal developments and squatting. You also have places that have been developed without the drainage being developed in tandem. So all of these factors came together, and we see this time and time again every rainy season where we have heavy rainfall falling in extreme amounts and causing flooding in various areas across the country.
Is this something that we can predict, or we just have to go with the flow and wait and see how this unfolds?
Well, the fact that it was going to rain for 5 consecutive days, that was very well forecast. We were seeing that meteorologists both at the Met Office, CNC3, we were seeing that about a week and a half before it even happened. So it did not take us by surprise. What did take everybody by surprise was how much rain actually fell on the ground, because we knew it was going to be above 100 millimeters in isolated areas. For some context for that rainfall amount, anything above 100 millimeters of rainfall inside a 3-day period means problems for Trinidad and Tobago. But what ended up happening was we saw multiple areas. It wasn't isolated anymore. Instead of like one part of the country receiving 100 millimeters of rainfall, we saw an entire half of Trinidad receive anywhere from 100 to 200 millimeters of rainfall, was reaching as high as 500 millimeters of rain inside that 5-day period. So while the rain was forecastable and we got it right, What was difficult to forecast and predict would have been that rainfall total. Generally, during new wet season, as we are approaching, we know that rainfall is going to fall in certain days, but how much rain actually falls from the atmosphere, that is still science that is still trying to be worked out. We have different forecasting models that show different things sometimes, and we try to choose the best one that fits the situation. To, you know, gauge how much rain is going to fall.
Well, we hope that the half of the country that the rain fell in was to have a dam here or there that they could catch some of the water.
Yeah, and that's a good concern, and it's actually a good question. So right after those rains fell, I would have reached out to WASA to get the latest reservoir data from them. And what we actually saw was two of the four reservoirs prior to that week of that five-day rainfall period were below its long-term averages. And even after that rainfall event, we did see those reservoirs still remain below their long-term averages, but it did come up ever so slightly. So I think the biggest winner of that rainfall event would have been the Hollis Reservoir. It went from 42 to 47% capacity, but still below its long-term average at that moment. I believe it was around 50-something percent. I can't remember. And then we have the Carney Arena Reservoir and the Hillsborough Dam. Both of those were above its long-term capacity still, but everyone was still on the decline. Because remember, our grounds were very, very dry. We had a lot of dry weather from March into April. With April, I believe we only got measurable rainfall about 10 of those days through the month. We just had a very wet end, so the ground was very parched and actually absorbed a lot of that water instead of flowing into our reservoirs and being caught in there.
Yeah, you know, that is a phenomenon in this country that citizens will never be able to wrap their minds around. That we have,
yeah, I agree.
We have bad flood, as we say in this country. Car getting washed away, as we see in the videos and everything else. And WASA still saying, well, here now, we don't have enough water. The dams at this capacity and that kind of thing. But
That's why WASA is actually making the move to use more groundwater instead of surface water. So surface water would be our reservoirs, our rivers, and that is at the mercy of rainfall, whether it's extreme rainfall that causes turbid conditions that unfortunately leads to our surface water treatment plants going under for a little while because the conditions are turbid and the water can be processed, versus groundwater, which is water that is extracted from wells that is not necessarily at the mercy of the extreme rainfall events we see during the dry season or wet season, whether it's no rainfall or too much.
Yeah.
So with more wells being developed across the country, we should begin to see a little bit more consistent water supply. And in fact, that is the reason why Northwestern Trinidad is not under a water schedule the way that the rest of the country is under a water schedule, because they are actually extracting water from the ground instead of using surface water treatment plants. Yeah.
Those are some really interesting dynamics that fly over the head of the average individual. All they know is rainfall and we're supposed to have water, we don't have it. But it's an interesting discussion to understand how WASA really operates. And it is far and very remote a reality from what the average citizen thinks happens at WASA and how they operate, where they produce their water, how they get it and all of those things. But I think that's a discussion for another time. I need to take a couple messages. We spoke about what transpired. When we get back, we'll speak about some of what's to come and some of the flooding that we saw and probably some of the things we should be considering. Heading into the rainy season not too long from now, our special guest this morning, meteorologist Colleen Hussein, and joining us, expected to join us just after the 8 o'clock news, civil engineer Fazir Khan, of managing director of Alpha Engineering and Design 2012 Limited. Messages, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. This morning we're speaking, of course, with a meteorologist, our very own Colleen Hussein. We were discussing some of what transpired recently with the heavy rainfall and some of the lessons that we should have or we should take away from those. And that's probably where we should take our discussion now, Colleen. The flooding, of course, is always of concern. And you've explained to us the sheer volume of rain would have made it absolutely impossible for it to be contained within the waterways. We saw the spillover, which was inevitable. But what are some of the lessons that we should take away from what we saw recently when it comes to flooding and probably what we should or should not be doing?
I feel like for coming off the heels of the 2022 wet season, where unfortunately, for the first time in a very long time, we actually had 3 flood-related fatalities. By now, people should know not to drive through floodwaters.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually something we saw quite a bit during that week of April where we had a lot of rainfall. Not only people were driving into floodwaters, which is highly irresponsible, but we saw multiple vehicles across both northeastern Trinidad and southern Trinidad drive into very high floodwaters and then get swept away, leading to either high water rescues being done by people with very large trucks nearby or the fire service. And when people drive into floodwaters, you not only put your life at risk, you damage your own property, but then you put the lives of first responders, whether those are the average citizens just being good people on the side of the road helping you out, or the lives of first responders at risk. So that would be my big, don't do this as we head into the wet season this year. We don't want to see any more flood-related fatalities.
You would think that there's a level of common sense that would have, you know, been injected in people's approaches to these things, but it doesn't seem that way. For whatever reason, people feel that they could get away with it, and with disastrous consequences, as you've highlighted. And it doesn't seem as though we're going to get away from that moving forward. We may always have instances of persons willing to play Russian roulette with their lives. And that's one element of what people should take into consideration. But when it comes to some of the infrastructure, some of the other things that we've been hearing about when it comes to clearing waterways and dealing with these problems, Sangre Grande, I know the mayor who sits in the corporation, that's Anil Jutaram, he's been very vocal. He's been very active as well in trying to get some of these things done. And he had made several pronouncements about what is taking place. But when you have a situation, Colleen, where you have this huge volume of water being set free on the nation within a very short space of time, is there anything you really can do? Or you just have to sit and let nature take its course?
Yeah, the acting mayor of Port of Spain put it very best. They were talking about flooding in Port of Spain, and they were like, you're trying to squeeze a 2-liter bottle of Coke or anything into a chubby bottle. It's not going to fit. It's going to spill over. So the best advice I can give anyone who lives in a flood-prone area, even though you may not consider yourself in a flood-prone area, if you live near watercourses, that means there's the possibility of that watercourse flooding at some point in your lifetime there. So if you know you live near a watercourse or in a flood-prone area, when you hear there's going to be a lot of rainfall on the horizon, whether it's 100 millimeters of rainfall that's forecast or 500 millimeters of rainfall, the best advice would be to prepare your property to protect lives and property. Whether that's be moving your vehicles to higher ground or out of the area, moving your property to a higher level, putting up sandbags, all that stuff. And as we head into the wet season and the hurricane season, these are preparations that we should be pre-positioning things in place in the event we see heavy rainfall like this come again. Because not every time forecasters, like we saw in 2022, would get it 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes these systems make it move and they move further north. Sometimes they move further south. And when it does happen, we see some devastating impacts, particularly with flooding.
Yeah.
So use this flood event that we had at the end of April as essentially your dry run for the 2023 wet season and the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season.
Yeah, we need to take a couple messages to take us up to the news. When we get back after 8, we'll broaden our discussion to climate change and some of what has been going on, some of the effects, and some of what we could probably do as individuals, as a nation, moving forward with our special guest this morning. That is, of course, Colleen Hussein. And we're supposed to have another guest joining us just after 8. A couple messages, news, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
3.5 minutes after 8. This is the final hour of our show here this morning. We continue our discussion, and we do have, of course, with us Colleen Hussein. And joining our discussion now, a gentleman who definitely has the experience when it comes to engineering to give us some insight into some of what we're confronted with and some of what we probably need to do. Let's welcome to our program civil engineer Fazir Khan. Good morning to you and welcome to our program.
Hi, good morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. I'm not going to go into the long approach of asking you to identify yourself and familiarize our listeners, because I know that I have you for a very short period of time here this morning, and I really do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. We've been discussing the issue of flooding in this country for a long time on this program, for as long as I can remember, and we were speaking to Colleen just prior to the 8 o'clock news, and when we went back to what transpired in April, some of these heavy showers and some of the floods, but as a nation, we've been grappling with the issue of flooding for quite some time. Looking at your CV here, you have some pretty interesting qualifications and experience to go with this. And of course, to discuss some of what we're discussing this morning, I'd like to get your views on as a nation, have we been dealing with the issue of flooding in a manner that you think is sufficient? If yes, tell us what you think we've been doing well, and if not, well, tell us as well what some of the things you think we should be doing.
Thanks for that, Satish. Right, so the way you frame that question is quite interesting. If we were doing what we were doing well, we would not have the kind of flooding that we've been having. So I guess that's pretty much a no-brainer. What I have come to realize in the last couple of years is that generally throughout the Caribbean region, and I do practice throughout the region, climate change is being used as a whipping boy to mask the lack of attendance and action that we should have been taking over the years. And whereas climate change is a real thing, our present predicament regarding flooding has more to do with inadequate drainage infrastructure, inadequate systems for the maintenance of the built and natural infrastructure, and inadequate enforcement of planning regulations related to hillside development, watercourse reserves, etc. So our problems today are worse because of anthropogenic development, for instance, more so than the effects of climate change. And the example that you gave of the showers in April sort of emphasizes what I've just said, because these showers, this rainfall, whereas it may be a long duration rainfall that was experienced in certain parts of the country, that should not have caused the kind of flooding we saw, for example, in Sangre Grande. And I'm saying that the reasons I gave just now is more likely the reason that the flooding occurred, and not due to what people would quickly say it's climate change.
I'm looking at the information that was given on you, and you have a lot of qualification in detention pond systems, urban stormwater management, hydrological modeling for sustainable solutions on large sites, and it goes on as well to integrated coastal zone management and a host of different things. Someone with your kind of expertise, and obviously your experience in the field and monitoring things that happen in other parts of the world and so on, you would have a lot of ideas as to how we can treat with the problems that continue to confront us all the time. If I were to say to you, well, listen, give me two or three things that you believe we need to do and we probably can do, and you'll be able to assess that as well. Tell me about two or three things that you think we need to do to probably not necessarily eliminate flooding 100%, but drastically reduce it.
Okay, so the generic solutions for flood mitigation is well known, even to lay people. But as I said, specific solutions require specific studies. So people have been asking me, hey, how come the flooding in Sangre Chiquito was so bad, and what is the problem or the cause of the problem, and what is the solution? And I would refuse to answer that question very directly, because it does take a study of the hydrology, a study of the catchment, and an engineer's solution can only be complete after that study is done, a desktop study for instance, and then there would be field visits to identify what could be the problems either upstream or downstream of the area that flooded. So for instance, without going on that site, I would assume that there may be something upstream in terms of increased land development, for instance, that may have caused a lot of siltation, and downstream in the water courses that eventually drain that particular area, there may be some blockage or something of that nature, or unapproved development that could have caused a backup in the drainage, main drainage channel, leading to that sort of flooding. Now, in again, sticking in generic terms, every area, the different areas in Trinidad need to be looked at differently. So, Trinidad being an island, at our coasts, we tend to have a backwater effect that is tidal, that influences flooding in central and some parts of South Trinidad. So the solutions there are really difficult, because it involves trying to either elevate your structures, elevate your built development, elevate your roadways, or find ways to drain it by having floodgates and pumping. And we all see the protests and the reactions that go on from the residents, like say in Woodland, where they would frequently speak to flood pumps not working, floodgates being tampered with. So those solutions are difficult. In the Northern Range and in some parts of the Central Range, but mostly in Northern Range, we're dealing with a different problem where we have surface runoff coming from steep areas of the hillside, causing a lot of erosion, a lot of deposition of silt in the areas just below the Northern Range, resulting in clogged culverts and rivers, bridges, and then that results in flash flooding. It's a different type of flooding, but it could be highly dangerous, as we have all seen when the rainy season comes, and what happens on the eastern main road as the water tries to come over from the higher areas in the Northern Range in the inadequate drainage channels to cross to get into the main water courses that then go down to Central Trinidad. And then in Central Trinidad, what we will find, like Carony, is that we would have a flood that would last 2 or 3 days because of the tidal effect and all of this water coming down that would have fell three days before.
Yeah. It definitely, from what you're outlining to us, It's clear that the information is available as to what some of the contributing factors are to much of the flooding that we are seeing. But for some strange reason, we just don't necessarily see the remedial action in the manner in which we probably need to have that action taken. Are you of the opinion that some of the remedies related to what you're talking about are things that we can actually get done? Because when you speak to persons in authority and others, they give you all kinds of excuses as to why things cannot be done. And I don't want to take you into a realm of challenging what others are saying, but we need to get to the root of the matter. What's the fact? Are these things that impossible to do? Is it that people don't know what to do? What's your opinion?
So that's an interesting question, quite provoking, I should say. However, I am of the firm opinion that we can solve the problems. We can mitigate the flooding. And by mitigation, in very technical terms, what we talk about is reducing the depth of flooding and or reducing the duration of flooding. And again, one has to study the various areas and the mode of flooding in order to design and then develop, build out the solutions that would have an effect that would actually affect people's lives in a proper way. So, I mean, let's take the example of Port of Spain and South Key. For the kind of rain that would fall 15, 20 minutes, very hard showers, or not so hard, you'll always get flooding. Now it's like a normal thing to have flooding in South Key. And that is not something that we cannot solve. There have been many studies done in the past and built upon recently, and I think there is a gross lack of implementation in that case. And there is probably also a lack of being able to think outside the box of what the solution can be. There would have been upgrade to pumps. There may have been some attempt to clean the drains. The population is guilty for some aspect of it in terms of the plastic bottles and dumping of garbage, etc., and clogging up the outlets and outfalls. But we have to go back 100 years to actually see when the last major drainage infrastructure upgrade was carried out in Port of Spain. And that would have been the Dry River, East Dry River, and the other Dry River. And I've done some study of some of those channels, and clearly it can be established that the channels that were constructed when they were done however many years ago were ahead of their time in terms of catering for the capacity at that time, and even 20, 30 years beyond that time. And if one caters for what the literature says with respect to, say, climate change, we can increase the rainfall and runoff by, say, 10% in peak flows and peak rainfall periods, because that's what the literature says, that the effect is of climate change right about now. 10% increase in the flows and the capacities of those channels does not cause them to overflow. So what really is the cause? And one can look at the development upstream and go back and look at the Google Maps from many years and do an analysis of how the catchment changed. And the anthropogenic development. Again, now we have a lot of development that is not authorized, that has contributed to hardening of areas and increasing of what we call the C factors of the channel, and causing more surface runoff. So to go back to my original point, I can simply say that in a lot of these catchments, the drains have not been upgraded to suit the development that occurred over the last 50 years.
Okay.
If there are excuses, go ahead, sorry.
No, I thought you was finished. Wrap it up. Let me hear the other part, because this is really interesting stuff.
Yeah, if there are spaces for things like detention ponds, which I don't think that there are, except if one wants to have a study to consider, say, the Queen's Park Savannah. In some developed countries, you'd find that these detention areas occupy large green areas, subterranean. So it's like a big cavern that's created under the ground to hold the water and then release it gradually, so that you have an attenuation of what we call the peak flood flow.
Mm-hmm.
That would be just looking at it in a broad brush way. What one needs to look at, you need to look at large areas where you can detain water. But water coming down at speed, or surface runoff coming down at speed, is difficult to hold back and retain. But one needs volume and some depth in order to do that. And then how you drain that water afterwards is tricky, but it is an engineering problem that could be solved. In the Brian Lara Promenade, for instance, that entire area could have an underground platelet where water can be collected and then used for an attenuation of the flow. So there are solutions, but it needs some study and some innovative approaches, because I don't know that we have space to build another dry river, for instance.
Well, I know that I have you for much longer than the time that I was supposed to already this morning, but this is such we need such an in-depth discussion to get into some of these issues in a more pertinent manner, that I believe that we'll have to have you back again when you have more time, so that we can delve deeper in some of these issues. You've given us a lot to think about this morning already, into what is possible and probably some of the reasons we need to understand as to why we're not doing them. So, Mr. Khan, I want to thank you this morning for being a part of the show and for giving us your insight for this very brief interview. And hopefully, as we move on, because moving closer to the rainy season, the hurricane season, these discussions are going to become more pertinent for the obvious reason. And I'm sure that we'll have you back later on to discuss more of this. Thank you once again for being with us here this morning. It was nice having you. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you heard Fazir Khan, Managing Director of Alpha Engineering and Design 2012. And some of the things that he spoke about there. Colleen, as we continue our discussion, prior to the 8 o'clock news, I was saying that we need to have a furthering of our discussion on climate change. You spoke about the intensities and the volume and how unpredictable things have become. Let me ask you a question, because you are passionate about this thing called climate change. And we've seen from your reports and everything else that you really have a deep interest in this. Do you believe that citizens in Trinidad and Tobago are educated enough as we need to be and engaged enough as we need to be on this issue of climate change?
That's a good question. I don't want to pull statistics willy-nilly to prove or disprove what I'm about to say. But I think a study needs to be done on the overall knowledge of climate change in Trinidad and Tobago, where citizens not only believe it, but do they completely understand what is actually happening to our climate. I don't know, to my knowledge, if a study like that has been done. But it's a good question to delve deeper into. But definitely when it comes to does the population understand what climate change is doing to Trinidad, Tobago, the wider world, besides it's getting hotter. I don't think we have a full appreciation of that.
Yeah, I agree with you, because we have discussions here, and I am positive that when we end our conversation, There are people who are going to call and say, listen, you see me this climate change thing, I don't believe that. Rain falling, sun shining as normal, what you're telling me about climate change. And we've actually had those discussions. But as we wrap up our discussion here with you this morning, let's look ahead to the coming hurricane season and the rainy season. What are some of the expectations? Do we expect this year to be more active? Do we expect the rainfall to be heavier? Can we guesstimate these things or not?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's one that experts are still trying to figure out. So let me give you some broader context before we narrow into what we can expect. So there are factors that are for a wet and factors for a dry wet season. And same thing with factors for a active hurricane season, an active hurricane season, and factors against. So let's go with the factors against, because these are going to be the prevailing ones. Temperatures in the Pacific Ocean are running above average. And why would temperatures in another ocean thousands of kilometers away mess with Trinidad and Tobago's weather and the Caribbean? Well, when we have warmer temperatures in the Pacific Ocean, that causes more showers, more thunderstorms to form in that area of the world. And then we have wind shear. This is a change in wind speeds in the atmosphere that can suppress showers and thunderstorms from forming in our area, in the Caribbean region, not just Trinidad and Tobago. When we have these warm temperatures in the Pacific Ocean, it's called an El Nino. And forecasters and climate models are very suggestive and forecasting with a high level of confidence that as we head into the peak months of the hurricane season, we are actually going to enter an El Nino. And that should mean that we will have increased wind shear across the Caribbean region, and that will result in weaker or at least fewer tropical cyclones forming, as well as less overall rainfall for our neck of the woods. So that's talking August, September, October, peak of the hurricane season. Before then, though, before this El Nino develops, we have our temperatures in the Atlantic Ocean that are reaching near record levels, if not record warmth at this moment. When we have warm temperatures in the Atlantic Ocean, that can support showers and thunderstorms from form associated with either our local weather near Trinidad and Tobago, these heat-driven thunderstorms that we see during the afternoon across western parts of Trinidad, as well as providing more fuel, or at least more energy, for thunderstorms and showers that form from the intertropical convergence zone, from tropical waves that move across the country, low-level troughs, all the different weather systems that affect Trinidad. So we have factors for, factors against, and they're not exceptionally clear-cut at this moment. What I can tell you is, based on the latest seasonal projections for the hurricane season, we are expecting to see a near-average or below-average number of named storms form in the Atlantic Basin. So an average hurricane season, we would see typically around 14 named storms. So below average, we're looking at that 11 to 14 number of named storms form in the Atlantic Basin. But as we know in Trinidad and Tobago, it does not even take a direct hit from a tropical cyclone to cause carnage. In fact, it doesn't even take a storm. It takes a singular thunderstorm producing a prolific amount of rainfall to cause significant flooding in the country. So it only takes one. So these seasonal projections, while they are good for insurance adjusters and for just the overall awareness and disaster preparedness managers, how they should, what level of preparedness they really need for the hurricane season, we all should be prepared. Now, when it comes to our local wet season, it may actually begin this weekend following the passage of a very weak tropical wave that is supposed to move across the country on Saturday into Sunday. At least from May and June, the Met Office is forecasting we should see near average rainfall or just above average rainfall because of those sea surface temperatures that I mentioned. When we go into July, August, September, at least that further afield, at least projections, we are looking to get below average rainfall because of that El Nino phenomenon I mentioned. But it can only take one tropical cyclone to just move near Trinidad and Tobago to push our overall monthly rainfall totals to that above average category. And April was a very good example of that. April, before April 22nd, Piako International Airport recorded 1.6 millimeters of rainfall. Yet, by the end of the month, we were triple the monthly average rainfall totals.
And that's where we're going to have to leave our discussion this morning. I'm sure and positive we're going to have further discussions as we move ahead and things develop or don't develop as we're expecting. And Kalina, I want to thank you once again for being with us here this morning and giving us some insights into some things that we didn't necessarily know, such as WASA and how they operate. That information, a lot of people are very thankful for. It gives them a clearer understanding of what's going on. And of course, we will continue to discuss the issue of climate change. It's with us. We need to confront it one way or the other. Thank you once again for being with us here this morning on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.